This is program C-1128. We have 166 days left until we fly off to Israel. If you're going to go with us, you need to get that arrangement made very, very soon. All the information you need is on the website, intotheword.net, right there on the front page in one of the hot links. So please take care of that. Make sure your preacher goes with you. If you haven't done so, approach your leadership right away and get permission and arrangements financially for him to go with us when we go. He will come back with a lot of great Bible stories from a personal perspective. Let's continue our study of the book of Revelation. We're doing it not exactly in sequential order because I think it's helpful that we bring certain bits of material together at one point because the two vision streams, the pouring out of God's wrath as represented by the trumpets and the pouring out of God's wrath represented by the vials or the containers, the bowls, they're covering the same material, but they've got different lead-ups. They've got different run-ups to that information. And so we're trying to get all of that information under our belt appropriately before we start tackling the pouring out of God's final wrath. We are currently in the book of Revelation chapter 12, and we are going to start at verse 13, because that's where we dropped off, where we're looking at this vision of the long drawn-out war between the seed of woman and the seed of the serpent. Now, that war started all the way back in Genesis chapter 3 in the Garden of Eden when Satan was told by God, I'm going to put a state of warfare between your seed and her seed, and he's going to knock you on the head even as you knock him on the heel. And that's the first reference to the atonement of Jesus Christ, that is, he will die to save us from our sins, and how he will come to destroy the works of the devil. So that goes all the way back to the beginning. So that's when the war started, and the people that were typically from the Abrahamic, Isaac, Jacob line, that's the Jewish people as we refer to them, they were the ones that God was preparing to bring the Messiah in to the world through. So there's this woman in the vision of chapter 12 represents the righteous remnant that comes through Israel like that. And they were anticipating the birth of the Messiah at exactly the time he arrived there at the last part of the first century B.C., and his ministry in the beginning of the first century A.D. But when Jesus arrives on the scene, the dragon, Satan, tries to assassinate him. First through Herod as he's a baby, later through mob action, trying to stone him to death and things like that. And none of that could occur because as John the Apostle writes in his gospel, his time had not yet come. Finally, Satan does kill Jesus through the work of the Sanhedrin and through the Romans, but he doesn't stay dead. Instead, God uses that death as the atonement mechanism, and Jesus bodily resurrects to show his power as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. He ascends back on high, just as the vision in chapter 12 predicts, and then we've got this war between the righteous people that believe in Jesus and the unrighteous people that don't. And Satan and his angels are on one side behind the scenes. Michael and his angels are on the side of the righteous behind the scenes as well. Until finally, at some point, yet future to us, God will give the signal and Michael and his angels will boot Satan and his angels right out of the spiritual dimension into our dimension. And this is going to come with some pretty spectacular things that we've already talked about a little bit. The sun going dark, The moon will be turned blood red. The stars will be falling from the heaven. And I actually think the stars falling from the heaven is a reference to Satan and his angels being booted out of the spiritual dimension. In fact, I skipped over it earlier, but it talks there about the heavens, or the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And the powers of the heavens is a reference to the supernatural dimension rulers that we struggle with. Remember, Ephesians chapter 6 describes that our struggle is not against flesh and blood. It's against principalities and powers. It's against these forces of wickedness in the heavenly realm. So all of that's been going on right up until 3.5 years before Jesus comes. Then Satan and his bunch will be kicked out. Sun will go dark, moon blood red, stars will be falling from the sky, and then Satan will be stuck in our dimension for the remainder of the story. And that's when we have the next part of the woman's story, that is faithful Israel, faithful people. It says in chapter 12, verse 13, and I'll go back over this later. I've got this later in my notes for reasons that we'll go over at that time. It says, when the dragon saw that he was thrown down to the earth, that is, he's been booted out of the spiritual dimension, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. So he tries to attack anyone that is on the side of the coming King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Now, I think he particularly targets Messianic Jews. That's my opinion. I think he actually wants to do away with any religious Jew that expects the Messiah to save them. And so I think he gets booted out into the dimension near the Middle East, and so that becomes his focal point. Verse 14, but the two wings of the great eagle were given to the woman so that she could fly into the wilderness to her place where she was nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent. Now, time, times, and half a time is a Jewish expression, shows up in the book of Daniel. It's a reference to 3.5 years. So once again, we see this short period of time that the final confrontation takes place during. Later, I will develop this, but I'll just give you my sense of it now. The two wings of the great eagle, I believe, is a reference to the two witnesses. I believe the two witnesses will pop in at the beginning of the final 3.5 years, and they will take this righteous remnant to Jerusalem and will protect them for the next 1,260 days. And then they themselves will be killed. This righteous remnant will have a really rough time at that last week or so of the 3.5 years, but it all turns out okay in the end, and we'll talk about it more later. Verse number 15, the serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman so that he might cause her to be swept away with the flood. But the earth helped the woman. The earth opened its mouth and drank up the river which the dragon poured out of his mouth. Now, how literal that is, whether or not there might be like an attempt to drown these people, I don't know. But the two wings, that is, in my opinion, the two witnesses protect them. And they are taken to Jerusalem where they are safe and sound. So Satan can't get them. They're off limits. And so he decides to take out his anger elsewhere. Verse 17. So the dragon was enraged with the woman and went off to make war with the rest of her children. That is, those who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus. So these are all the other believers on planet Earth. The believers specifically in Yehoshua HaMashiach. And that, of course, would include all of us who are Gentile believers in Jesus and have been grafted into the tree of faith and are part of the righteous remnant. So Satan can't get this particular group that's at Jerusalem, so he goes after everyone else. And that brings us then to where I want to pick up in the notes today on page number 49. If you don't have a copy of them, you can find them online, intotheword.net. Look in the PDF resources section. Those of you that don't have internet capability, just give me a phone call and I'll get you a hard copy. 574-850-1327. So I'm on page 49, and as I've done in so many places in the notes, I've drawn together different places in Scripture that uses the exact same phrases in the original language, and because of that, I believe it's talking about the same things. So first we start with Revelation chapter 12, verse 18, although in a lot of English versions, this is the first part of chapter 13. Just want to acknowledge that. So he, meaning the dragon, stood on the sand of the sea. Now I think that is both literal and figurative at the same time. The literalness is, I think he probably does pop into our world somewhere in the Middle East, not far from the Mediterranean. I think that is where he will land with whoever his top council is. But the figurative side of it is that in the book of Daniel, the sea represents humanity, out of which comes certain governments that cause trouble for God's people. And so Satan, who is barred from the spiritual dimension, stuck here on planet Earth, he's basically stranded here, has got to now use his human agents to carry out his larger will of barricading planet Earth against the coming of Jesus in 3.5 years. So I think he's going to try to tap in to those that are already on his side on planet Earth, and maybe even gain the approval and support of a few others. At this point in my notes, I bring in the book of Revelation chapter 17. The reason for that is that chapter is a decoding chapter. It is a place where an angel explains to the Apostle John some of the symbols. And since the symbols we're looking at here in chapter 13 are explained in chapter 17, I think this is a good place to bring it in, okay? Because you know my principle. The Scripture is always its own best commentary. It's always its best decoder. So let's always get in the habit of doing that. So Revelation chapter 17 has this introduction. One of the seven angels, having the last seven bowls, came and spoke with me, saying, "Come here, I will show you the great prostitute who is sitting upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth prostituted themselves, and by the wine of whose prostitution those living upon the earth were intoxicated." So his focus will be, in chapter 17, upon the woman that is riding the beast. That woman appears to be false faith. She is in direct opposition to faithful, the faithful remnant. But in telling that story, he also helps decode the identity of the beast she is riding. So verse 3 of 17 says, "He carried me in spirit form into a wilderness." And then he's going to show him this beast. So back in Revelation 13, 1, "I saw a 10-horned, 7-headed beast and a blasphemous name upon its heads." And that's exactly what it says in Revelation 17, 3 as well. You will remember this is exactly the description of Satan earlier, that he takes this form. And it is, I think, indicative of the fact that Satan is the puppeteer who has got his hand up the back of the puppet. And so the puppet is basically him. The beast leader and the beast government is nothing more than a human avatar and a human agency of Satan. Now, he sees this beast come up out of the sea with 10 crowns upon its horns. We'll talk about the 10 crowns in a little bit. But the rising up out of the sea, if you're familiar with the book of Daniel, that should immediately draw your memory's attention to chapter number 7. Now, chapter number 7 is important because it describes everything leading up to the final confrontation we're looking at right now. So chapter number 7 of Daniel is a very brief preparation for the book of Revelation, chapters 4 and onward. And this is what it says in Daniel chapter 7. Four great beasts, each different from the others, rose out of the sea. And after this I watched, behold, a third beast was like a leopard. Behold, a second beast was like a bear, and the first was like a lion. Now, the reason I went out of order there is because I just read you the order that will appear in the book of Revelation chapter 13. In Daniel's day, Daniel was being told the successive nations that would rise in opposition to the work of God, and therefore the people of Israel. And the lion was a winged lion, and it was representative of the nation of the Babylonians. And it's not all that surprising it was a winged lion, because that was an ancient representation of Isis, that is, the goddess of the Babylonians. And you can find in my appendix to the notes several images that will help understand the coding that Daniel was given. The second beast that Daniel saw was like a lopsided bear, and that was a reference to the Medo-Persian Empire. It was lopsided because it was made up of two components, and one kind of overtook the other. The third beast was like a leopard that had four wings on its back, and that's a reference to the Macedonian Greek Empire of Alexander the Great and how it flew across the ancient Mediterranean basin, took over the Persian Empire that had been taken over from the Babylonians. So that's one of the things we find here, is each one of them pretty much just takes over the territory of the one previous and expands on it. The last beast, the dragon beast in Revelation, is a representation of the Roman Empire. It is a terrible beast. It's different than the ones that came before it, and yet it takes over their territory plus. So that's the historical understanding of Daniel chapter 7. But in Revelation 13, the symbolism is used about the final world empire building upon all of that. So this is what it says. I saw a 10-horned, 7-headed beast and a blasphemous name upon its heads. It rose out of the sea with 10 crowns upon its horns. The beast which I saw was like a leopard, and I think by that it means that this final world empire is going to be really quick in coming into existence. Its feet like those of a bear, which I think is perhaps a reference to the steadfast legal system. The Medes and the Persians, once they put something in writing, they felt that it couldn't be denied. It had to stay in place. And so perhaps that's also going to be the attitude of this final world ruler and this world government, is once we put it down, it's guaranteed it has to stay that way. And then its mouth was like the mouth of a lion. And the big thing about the lion in the symbolism of Babylon was the pride of Nebuchadnezzar. That's what he's known for in the book of Daniel. The guy that takes over the throne eventually, Belshazzar, he is also full of himself, full of braggadocio. And I actually think that that might be what's being brought out here about the final government and the final world ruler, is that they will be full of themselves, just like the Babylonian government was. And then the dragon gave it its power, its throne, and great authority. So this is the puppet of Satan, this final government that rises up out of the chaos of the beginning of the final 3.5 years, is Satan's tool, because he's trapped here on planet Earth, and he utilizes this to get what he wants done. Now, before I go on any farther, I want you to note, when you go through the Living the Last Days Prophecy Seminar notes, page number 51 has a chart that shows the three prophetic dreams from the book of Daniel that helps with some of the symbolism in the book of Revelation and understanding the characteristics of the historical governments that superseded one another but kept parts of each of them in place. It will be the basis upon which this final world government will be established. Okay, back to the notes. I'm on page 49 still, down at the bottom, looking at the text for Revelation chapter 13. One of its heads looked as if it had been slain to death, and its death wound healed. The whole earth marveled after the beast. Language similar to that is found in Revelation 17, as well as in Daniel chapter 7. Verse 4, they worshipped the dragon because he gave authority to the beast, and worshipped the beast, saying, who is like the beast, and who is able to make war with it? And so this final government is going to feel irresistible. And I think part of that is because it comes together out of the chaos that ensues at the beginning of the final 3.5 years. Remember, it kicks off with the breaking of the sixth seal, with the sun going dark and the moon turning blood red. And that seems to indicate some major, major atmospheric disruptions. The sun does not go dark unless there's an awful lot of particulate matter in the air, unless there's a lot of haze up there. The same thing for the moon. The moon doesn't go blood red unless there is a lot of haze. Now, the normal blood red moon, which is a full moon, it's blood red during its rise because you're seeing it through a whole bunch of layers of atmosphere. As it gets higher up in the sky, that redness kind of disappears. But if you're going to have a moon that's always red, that means there's a lot of haze in the atmosphere. And I think that might be related to a lot of the chaos that will ensue at the beginning of the final 3.5 years. As for the beast having one head that looks like it was wounded to death and then came back to life, I think this is a double meaning. I think, first of all, it applies to the government, that there will be a government in place right before all the chaos starts at the beginning of the final 3.5 years. I think that government is going to fall apart because of all the chaos, but then it will come back together again, and it will look as if it resurrected from the dead, as if it came back to life, and that this is going to add to its mystique. But I am also of the opinion, with other Bible teachers that this might be the case for the beast leader, that is, the final world ruler. I think it is possible, even highly likely, that during all of the chaos that kicks off the final 3.5 years, he ends up getting very badly hurt. I think it is possible that he might even look as if he is dead because he's been wounded in the head. And then, perhaps through the intervention of Satan and his band of fallen angels that have been stranded here on planet Earth, I think it's possible that he might intervene and help this guy come back to health. And that is going to add to that man's mystique. And that he will be able to pull ahead as the final dictator, as the final world ruler, because he also is looked at as someone who has come back from the dead. And he will play on that. Well, we're almost out of time, so this is what we're going to do next. We are going to come back tomorrow and deal a little bit more with the symbolism of this final beast and talk about the symbolism of the seven heads, the 10 horns. We'll talk a little bit more about the woman that is riding on the back of this beast. And we're doing all of this because we want to set the stage for seeing how the beast tries to wipe out the righteous remnant, and how the two prophets, the two witnesses, stand up against all of that, and they are kind of the final line of defense against this final world government.